You are now listening to the Project Kuwait.
To the Project Kuwait.
To the Project Kuwait.
Where we stop at nothing to bring you the right facts on health, fitness, and psychology. Featuring some of the world's most experienced professionals. So you can learn, live, and live. With your hosts, Meg, Dr. D, and Mehdi.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of The Project. And in this episode, Abdellah Asghari is coming back on the show to discuss the gym business post-COVID-19. But before we got into that discussion, he talked about how he had heart surgery and got right back into the gym 10 days later to do some cardio and how he got himself back to 100% and his amazing physique, how he's shredded right now. We go into the gym industry, what it's going to look like, the future of it, current applications that you see floating around online. Are they good? Are they bad? What are the good ones? How can you tell if it's good? We also get into the HR side of the gym industry and what it's going to look like for you as a client going back to the gym later on. All this and more in today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode. And I am bringing back on, well, who's coming back on? The guru himself, Abdellah Asghari, consultant, and all around badass, man. Like we were talking about before we started recording, you've gotten pretty jacked since the last time you were on the show, dude.
Thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure to sit and talk to you, kind of talk about the industry, the business, the fitness side, and what's going on now, obviously. Since the lockdown, I've actually stuck to my same schedule. I'll wake up at 5 a.m., I'll take my dog out, come back, do my pre-workout, do the same routine. I have a little setup here at the house where I can get my workouts in. So I've been working out and I have a small section here that I've been working from. So I will sit in this room till 4 p.m. to stick to my routine. And then I'll do some cardio around 5:30 or 6. And right before I go to bed, I'll do like either another cardio session or I'll do some ab work. So I've been putting in at least 3 sessions a day, dude.
Nice, man. Nice, dude. That's all you can really do. If I didn't have a 5-year-old running around, I'd be doing the same exact thing. What growth have you experienced from putting in the 3 sessions a day? When I was doing that extra volume a few years ago, it made a world of a difference. Like I just noticed all of a sudden I was getting shredded and big as hell. So how's your experience been with the stress levels of the time?
I think same here because I've been getting bigger. And I've been getting more shredded. I think it's because my workouts are in 3 separate times of the day. And I get to eat in between. I will arrange my meals. I'll do all my macros according to what I did that morning and what I'm going to do later on that day. So it worked out really great for me, man.
That's amazing. There's always been anecdote about frequency training throughout a day and splitting up your workouts all the way back to Arnold's time. And it depends on your body at the same time. Everyone's different. And for someone like me that's a CrossFitter, I try doing the split because CrossFit workouts are crazy. So if you try splitting it, by the second workout, you don't feel like getting back out there. Yeah. But bodybuilding, yeah. Like, dude, you've gotten jacked though. Like since the last time you were on the show, I've been watching your Instagram. And man, mashallah, you have put on some serious size and serious muscle right now. And I just got to tip my cap to you, dude, because it's amazing.
Thank you, sir.
Have you changed anything in your routine? Because how old are you? Sorry, just for the listeners who don't know your background, can you give them a quick synopsis of your background again, the operation, your age and everything?
Well, I turned 46 in 28 days, man.
Oh, wow. Wow. You can kick my ass. That's pretty cool. Mashallah.
And funny enough, I experienced a heart attack in January of 2019. It was very surprising to myself, to my wife, to my family, to my doctor. My doctor couldn't believe it when it really happened. And we did all the tests and he's like, you know what? We're going to go in. You have blockage. We're going to put in some stents. And you should probably stay away from the gym, weight training for maybe 3 to 6 months. So I'm like, dude, you might as well let me die on that bed than telling me stay away from the gym. But I stayed away from the gym literally for 9 days after that surgery.
Oh, wow.
I was in the gym day 10, just doing cardio though, so people don't go crazy. I did some cardio for the first week, 10 days, and then slowly and gradually got back into the lifting. But when things like this happen to you, it just makes you smarter. When you should give a little, when you can push a little extra, and be very smart about your training, your nutrition, all that stuff.
Were there any lead-up signs? I mean, were you a smoker or like was it just out of the blue? It just came about.
When I explained to the lab guy that was doing all the blood work, I'm like, look, I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I'll have a drink maybe once or twice a year. I eat healthy. 85% of my meals are home cooked. So when they got deeper into the testing, then they recognized there's a genetic aspect to it, to the high cholesterol and things like that. So that's where it came from, basically.
Oh, wow.
It has nothing to do with bad habits.
So now, are you monitoring your cholesterol? Are you taking any medicine for the cholesterol, like any of that stuff? Or are you just kind of trying to do it all through smart nutrition and smart work, like just living a smart and healthy life?
I think it has to be a little bit of both. I am on medication, and it's a lifetime, you know, supply of medication that you have to be on. I'm more careful with my meals, you know. When I had cheat meals, I would go like all out and kind of like pig out throughout the whole day. But now I'll have something small just to satisfy whatever craving. And then I'll go back to the clean eating for the rest of the day, where in the past it was the full Friday. And yeah. I can't afford to do that anymore. Even for my physique, I noticed that I can't afford to do it anymore. And the training, of course, there's a lot more cardio involved in my training, and the weight training is much more smarter as well.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. I mean, you kind of have to take a shift. Now, let's go into, you said you started back in the gym 10 days after the surgery, which would probably be me. God forbid, if anything ever happened, yeah. I'd be right back in the gym, just like my wife.
I mean,
my wife, after she broke her arm, I mean, the first thing she asked, you know, her physio was, when can I get back under a bar?
Exactly.
When can I do some form of physical exercise? And I think a week later, she was working out again at the gym. Yeah, you know, just doing a lot of leg stuff, being smart about it. So you're 10 days out. You start with a little bit of cardio. How did you ease back into it? And I'm assuming it was probably a very humbling process also. So can you walk us through that? I know we were supposed to be talking about business, but I never got the background story.
We can get to that. I mean, you know what? I treated myself as a beginner again, and I talked myself into it. It's not about ego anymore. It's not even about the way you look anymore. It's about you being healthy, maintaining strength. As all of us know, this takes time, and you will be able to maintain it, but it doesn't need to happen from day one. That's where the smartness came in. And I treated myself as a beginner, as somebody that has never picked up a weight in his life, a dumbbell in his life. And that's how I approached it. I struggled. Believe me, I had the hardest time. The first couple of months was difficult for me. But like you said, it humbles you and it makes you understand the bigger picture. What's the worst here? Is it your health or is it the way you look, basically?
100%. And some people always think that you have to like sacrifice everything to look good. But as you can see, I mean, if you see Abdella, like he's ripped, he's jacked. His side effect from eating healthy and leading a healthy lifestyle is a ripped, jacked body, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, how humbling was it? Because I remember when I tore my labrum, holding 2.5 kg, it was like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. I'm back here again. So how was it for you in that buildup? How long did it take to gradually build up to either get back to where you were or at least as close to it?
I was maybe 85% right around my target like 6 months later. But it was very humbling, believe it or not, not only inside of the gym, but outside. It makes you look at life a lot different. I mean, not that you didn't realize it before, but it makes you open your eyes more to what really matters in life. Yeah. Same thing. And as well as in the gym, same thing.
That's amazing. Now, do you experience like shortness of breath now or anything? Or alhamdulillah, mashallah, are you back to 100%?
No, I don't. I stuck to my medication, to my eating, to my training. I try to not... This is another thing that it taught me, dude, that nothing is worth it. You know, you don't need to stress and pull yourself apart over a problem at work or whatever it may be financially. Things tend to solve themselves out. And if you're patient and you're calm and you're collective and you're smart about things, you can solve the problems without stressing. That's one thing it has taught me for sure.
makes 100% sense. And right now is probably one of the most stressful times for people in the gym industry. And that's what I've been itching to talk to you about this, because life as we know it as gym goers, gym owners, trainers is definitely going to change in the next 6 months.
For sure.
And I'm sure right now you're saying stressful. I mean, there's probably gym owners right now that are losing the shirt off their back in the United States and here. So
you're looking at one.
You've got more stress than most. I mean, you're dealing throughout the GCC. You have contacts here, your consultancy, everything's weighing in on this. So how has it been over the last 2 months?
It's been very stressful. These 2 months put a big dent in our budget. But to look on the brighter side, we're hoping that there will be a huge surge of people that will be interested in coming to the gym after all this is said and done. Not only the regular gym goers, for Mehdi as a regular gym goer, I know you can't wait to get back into the gym. Although training at home might be more convenient, you're around your kids, you listen to the music that you want, you take all the breaks, nobody shares equipment, and you can take your time. You can do a 3-hour workout if you please. Nobody will bother you. But at the same time, you need that social aspect, you need the motivational aspect, you need to look at the guy next to you and get some type of inspiration from him or her. People need people at the end of the day. This is to the regular gym goers, the people that are, and believe it or not, there's a lot of people that started training during this pandemic, either because they realized that COVID-19 will kill them if they don't get healthy, because since this pandemic happened, doctors, healthcare workers, everybody's been preaching that you need to be healthy to boost your immune system. You need to eat healthy, to train, to avoid getting infected or avoid the contamination. So this is another part that will start coming to the gym. And you have people that have just never trained in their life because they have so much free time. They're like, you know what? Let me make the most of it. Maybe pick up a dumbbell here or there, or log on to a YouTube class and do that since I have so much time on my hands. These people as well will start seeking after facilities that can satisfy their needs as well.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I mean, some of us, like you said earlier, that we can work out at home, we're privileged and we're lucky. I feel very lucky that A, I have the space, and B, I was able to get the equipment, where there's other people that are in confined quarters and they can't do that. And it's really hard for them. And that 2 hours a day is all they have. And maybe when this is all said and done, they will seek out a gym membership or whatnot. But when you said working out at home, for me right now, that's kind of been a game changer. And I looked at my wife and I said, you know what? Part of me never wants to go back to the gym because A, the sanitization part of it, making sure it's sanitary with all this COVID stuff. And B, man, it's convenient. Like you said, like I don't have to share music. I don't got to share a bar. Granted, I don't have all the equipment I need, but it's easier. It's a lot easier, but the motivational factor of having people around me is what really hurts. So do you see the gym goers like myself switching maybe to trying to find different types of memberships? Are you guys in the gym industry looking at different types of memberships of like a 3-day a week or a 2-day a week? Because most of the people I know built their home gyms. So what are you guys doing? How have you looked at that?
A lot of gyms have been researching this because, like you said, people have found the convenience of working out at home. A lot of, even my friends in the US have turned their garages into home gyms. The fitness applications are on a rise now. People are seeking after a lot of these apps to do whatever type of workout that is customized for them or helps them with their goals. So yes, someone like Mehdi, let's take you for example. If you're not pressed on your daily schedule today, you might end up in the gym in the early or late evening. But if you're pressed up, you're like, look, man, I got my own space. I'm going to just do my workout before I go to work and then I can attend to my day. So you will have every other day type of memberships. Yes, a lot of people in the industry are looking into that and considering it.
Are you guys in the gym industry worried a little bit now that you may start to lose? I mean, let's be realistic. People aren't going to have the disposable income such as in 2008. I mean, are you guys worried about the next 2 years?
Not necessarily. Let's take Kuwait, for example. We've been on a partial, between partial and full lockdown, it's almost like 3 months now. And people have been getting paid in full. We're fortunate. I don't want to talk about the private sector, but I know the government sector has been getting paid in full.
100%.
And most probably nobody can travel before September or October. So once life transitions somewhat back to normal, people are going to want to spend this money that they have, that they've saved up. And they're going to spend it either at gyms, shopping malls, restaurants, you know, clothing stores, cafes, so on and so forth. So I think there will be a surge of expenditure in the last quarter of the year. And gym memberships are included. I read in an article that from now until the end of the year, 50% of gym memberships are going to be from new gymcomers, from people that have never been to a gym before. So that's promising, to be honest, to hear that.
That's amazing. That spikes your numbers at the end of the year, because we all know there's the honeymoon phase for the gyms, which is right after January 1st till about February.
And right before summer starts,
because everyone thinks they could get a six-pack in 6 weeks, you know? So now you guys are going to have that honeymoon phase probably after the pandemic. Let's go back to what you said. It was a very important point. You guys have been closed down for almost 3 months now, or partially closed for the gyms. And some of the gyms, such as the ones that you manage, will probably come out of this still on top and still within the market. But other gyms have almost gone belly up and look like they are going to go belly up, even with the government provisions. What do you say to their business plans? Do you think they started out with a faulty business plan to begin with? Or do you think it was just luck of the draw?
I'm assuming you're referring to small business gyms,
the small,
right?
A lot of the small gyms, the more boutique-y gyms that have small space, but all the equipment and so forth, a lot of them kind of opened up. They were a fitness enthusiast, so they opened their own gym here in Kuwait. And now a lot of them, you see them scattering to either sell equipment, rent equipment, or do online PTs. What do you see? Do you think it was a faulty? Because I have a business background. I have an MBA. And to me, if you can't sustain for more than 3 months without income, that means you had a bad business plan to begin with. So what's your input on that?
Absolutely. If you remember the last time we sat together and we talked about this, a lot of these small businesses are caught into the copycat business. It's either that, or like you mentioned, they're fitness enthusiasts without the financial background or without. You're absolutely right. If you can't survive for 2 or 3 months, then you do have a problem. Renting the equipment is fine. I think anybody would do that at this point. With this type of demand that's been going on in the market, sustaining your clients with these live online sessions is very smart. I would do the same. Actually, we are doing live sessions with a few of our trainers, whether it's a class, whether it's a home workout, so on and so forth, because you need to keep your clients engaged at times like this. But to not be able to pay salaries or rent or partial salaries for 3 months, then absolutely you have a problem, whether you're a gym, you're a cafe, whatever it might be.
I think one thing that I've seen out of this is the brand loyalty. I'm not going to name gyms, but some gyms offered some of their like A-list clients, let's call them, clients who have been at the gym for years and who have established relationships. They were like, all right, come by, get what you need now, when all this started. And to me, that's like, oh, that set them at a different level. And I know a guy who said, no matter whatever happens, I will never drop my membership from this gym after what they did for me. And there were other gyms who said, hey, come give us 20 KDs. We'll give you a kettlebell because all our workouts will be with kettlebells. So you're saying these models are going to be what sustains their brand loyalty after all of this, and people will probably feel a bigger sense of affiliation with them.
I'm not sure if giving someone a piece of equipment or a kettlebell will sustain brand loyalty. Sustaining brand loyalty should have been from day one. But at the same time, at times like this, we are one of the few facilities that haven't rented, haven't sold.
I've noticed
not one
that.
Piece of equipment. Not what one piece of equipment has left our doors during these times. I'm not sure if it's the smartest thing to do, but I'm convinced that I don't need to rent equipment for me to keep my customers happy. We're doing it from our platforms, live sessions, Instagram posts, home workouts, even posts where we're saying we miss our clients, we want them back as soon as possible, so on and so forth. Don't get me wrong. I've turned a lot of clients and members to where they can get these equipment, where they can buy stuff and set up their own little section at home. But a lot of it was to do with security purposes.
Your gym, on the other hand, let's not forget, it's a completely different base of clientele at your gym. Let's be realistic with the listeners. Your gym is completely different. You have an image to uphold also. So I can understand that. Like, I can totally see the rationale behind that, in all honesty, from a marketing perspective, which I think is a great move long term, because I think you'll be back in business. And one of the things that you guys will have as an upper hand is not calling to get your equipment back, which is one. When they say, let's open the doors, and then you're going to be scrambling for 3 weeks to get everyone to bring your equipment back, cleaning and sanitizing the equipment, which is going to cost money. So a lot of these people are going to lose another month's worth of business possibly just with that. And you guys may be playing this one right.
And I think we knew that, I kind of knew in the back of my head that this full lockdown will happen. So imagine if 60% of my equipment were at people's homes right now. I can't collect rent, or if they wanted it for 2 weeks, I wouldn't be able to get it back, so on and so forth. Plus, we have pretty expensive equipment. When I put this thing in your house, do I know who's using it on a daily basis?
Yeah.
Is Mehdi using it? Is the cook using it? Is the driver on this thing? You'll never know.
Is he having a quarantine workout party with 50 other people, which we see on Instagram all the time? So it's understandable.
Are the kids hanging off all of this gym equipment? You don't know what's going on. That was my reservation when we talked about it as a team and as a group.
No, that makes 100% sense. I mean, you're talking about a Concept 2 rower, for instance. Its value is at about 450 KD, and that's buying it from Concept 2, shipping probably 500 KD per rower. So it makes sense. You know, why would you want to risk that at the end of the day? And some people have. I rented out a Concept 2 rower, and it's an old Concept too. So I can see why the owner was like, yeah, you know what? I'll rent it to Mehdi for 2 months. Yeah. They're a small gym. And it was like one of the last rowers I found in Kuwait. I was lucky. So I could see that. But again, I want to reiterate, there's a difference between the clientele at your gym versus other gym. You guys are more upscale, have more of a higher echelon of a brand than other gyms. So it makes sense.
Absolutely. Just to add to this, one of my main concerns, like you said, reputation. If this household was coronavirus-free, COVID-19-free, and a piece of equipment was brought into this house, and after 10 days or 2 weeks, God forbid, somebody gets infected, the last thing you want is these people blaming you for that.
Represent, yeah.
Oh, we got it because the machine was brought in. They could have gotten it anywhere else. But I think this is the first thing people would assume. So this is another thing that really, really kept me reserved on all of this equipment stuff, to be honest.
No, that makes sense. That makes 100% sense. Yeah. So you know that when I brought my rower in, first thing I did, I didn't even bring it in the house. I wiped it down completely outside.
I'm sure.
Sanitized the hell out of it. All the equipment that I bought, the dumbbells, the barbells, everything was sanitized before it even came in. It was sanitized in the car. Just because I was like, you know what? I have a 5-year-old son. I'm not going to do that.
I did the same. I mean, when my equipment came in, I kept it on the sidewalk for like 40 hours almost.
Yeah.
I had someone spray it for me every 3 or 4 hours until we're like, okay, you can bring it in now.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. It makes total sense. And I know there's a gym, they called their members and they said VIP members. And they're like, look, come get your equipment. They wiped everything down for them too.
Yeah.
And I think it was a really good gesture by the gyms to do that, especially knowing that after this, people might not have that disposable income. And that's my other question to you is, you know, we saw that in 2008 with the emergence of boot camps, right? And the gym industry sort of changed and it took a twist and a turn, especially the bodybuilding. That's when functional fitness came out, CrossFit came out.
Oh, yeah.
And you had the emergence of all of this stuff, which I think did a lot of good to the industry, to be honest with you. And right now, with COVID-19, what do you see changing? I mean, do you see everything becoming more of an online platform? Do you see it I mean, how are things going to look after this? What innovations are we going to see?
I think the online fitness apps are going to be the highest sought after post-COVID-19. And I think in parallel, gym memberships as well. People are going to be doing both, I believe. Like we said, you'll have one day, say like a Friday afternoon, you don't want to leave the house, you're with your kids, you're like, okay, let me knock in a 35, 40 minute quickie before I take my family out to lunch. And you'll have vice versa.
Now, we've seen it in the States for the past like 3 years where companies are selling spin bikes. I think that's the new hot,
yes.
The new gimmicky thing in the States. Where
the Pantin bikes are very popular now.
They're extremely popular because you go into a virtual spin class, all that stuff. Now, that's already established itself globally in the market as a top-tier product. And right now, we have these apps that are emerging from Kuwait and in the GCC, but they're not top-tier products. And in fact, the people who are writing the programming for them aren't top-tier trainers like you'll get. I mean, who are you going to follow? The guy that is the strength and conditioning coach for Notre Dame or Abu Ali, who used to be the Khabbaz? You know what I mean? Like, where do you see that gap in the market? How is it going to even out towards these Western and European apps?
I'm glad you said that, although you're going to get me into a lot of trouble here, but...
It's all right. I'm already getting shit on by a lot of companies here. I get a lot of hate, man. Don't worry.
These local apps, man, I don't want to offend anyone, especially the people that develop these apps, the people that are running these apps, but they didn't do their research. They didn't pick the right people to represent their apps. Like you said, the programming is ridiculous on some of these applications.
I think we're both thinking of the same exact app, by the way.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I went onto one of these programs, and first of all, this person is not a trainer, is out of shape. If you ask this person, what's the difference between your glute and your hamstring, they probably wouldn't have a clue. And on top of all that, all the videos, all the exercises on the videos that are performed are completely wrong. This person cannot do a basic squat movement. And you're putting her on one of the hottest fitness apps in the country. And half of these people on there are not even certified trainers.
Yeah, no, it's 100%.
Let alone, I mean, like you said, yeah, I'll download any app from abroad before I'd follow any of these programs, man.
And in all honesty, I think a lot of the best trainers in Kuwait were neglected off of some of these apps because...
And I'll tell you one.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, I think because A, the people who created them looked for the social following and the social aspect more than they were looking for the quality. And to be honest with you, there's no brand consistency throughout any of the workouts or any of the programs. There's zero consistency in anything. And I think that's a huge flaw where you don't have that brand consistency throughout the workouts, like a main theme for every single workout, whether it's CrossFit, calisthenics, or so forth. So what were you going to say? Sorry.
Yes, it was a popularity contest, dude. Very sorry to say that this is not how your application will become successful. It's putting people that are popular in other fields and other sectors that have nothing to do with fitness. And I have a very close friend and colleague that rejected to work on this programming because I think he knew how this thing would turn up. The first thing I asked the developers is like, look, you have all of these different programs. There's no bodybuilding. You don't have a bodybuilding program on this application. What if I want to bodybuild?
Yeah, you're missing the biggest market.
Oh, it's not popular.
That's the biggest market in Kuwait. The biggest market is bodybuilding.
Yeah,
you're an
That's
idiot if you don't think the biggest.
They're like, it's not popular.
Have they ever been to Oxygen Gym?
I don't know.
Like, seriously, did they come out of a rocket? I mean, it's Kuwait. You know?
Yeah.
Kuwait is known now as the Mecca for bodybuilding. Like that is...
Definitely. Most definitely.
That's the signature. The first person I would have got on an app in Kuwait and I would have paid him 250,000 KDs would have been Ahmed Ashkenani. I'd have been like,
for sure,
buddy, here you go. Here's your money. We want you to do your programming on this application.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think going with the popularity of people versus the content was a completely wrong move. A lot of what we've done with the project, we've had people on here that have had no Instagram. you know, zero Instagram, but it's the content that
I remember.
Offer.
Yeah.
It's the content. That's what we're after, the knowledge and the content. It's a tough call. You know, I think it destroyed the rep for applications to emerge later on in Kuwait. What do you think?
And I think, just allow me before I answer that question, during this pandemic, I think people saw the difference because now people have more time to look at real workouts and real programming. Putting three workouts together is not programming. People have the wrong mindset or approach or definition to fitness programming. It takes a lot more to program some kind of workout or routine. So during this pandemic, when people started really searching for workouts, they saw the difference. I think it shows now.
100%. And for people that don't know who Jeff Cavalier is, Athlete X, he's probably has the best reputation in the market, in my opinion. He's been around the longest since 2009, and all of his content is free on YouTube. I mean, literally, you could go on there and write any type of program you need, whether it's strength program, bodybuilding, functional fitness, conditioning. And, you know, there's so many out there like that. And to compete with it this late in the game, it's like you said, I think they shot themselves in the foot. And the people who
they did.
And some people did appear on it and haven't reappeared. And I'm assuming because of the same thing that you said, they didn't want to associate their brand with it after a while.
I think they wanted an easy way out, basically.
Do you see this ruining the mindset and the rep later on for programs like this or applications to emerge?
I don't think so, but a lot of people are hesitant to put together a fitness app, probably because of what's going on now. But also, I don't think people have the right approach and know what it takes to put an app together like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think in all honesty, the best person to put an app together like that would be a trainer. If I was the CEO, I'd be like, all right, my two main important people right now is my media guy or my IT guy and the trainer. He's the head coach putting everything together.
You need a head coach that has a master's in biomechanics, has a bachelor's in sports sciences, and has a ton of experience under his belt. That's the type of person you need.
I'd go experience. I mean, some of the best strength and conditioning coaches, DeFranco out of the States. I mean, come on, you know, like what's his education? The guy, he's a master when it comes to bodybuilding, when it comes to strength and conditioning.
The education part you might need is for content when you're explaining.
Makes sense.
You need someone that's highly educated to pass that information from application to client, basically. Other than that, dude, you're picking a front desk, somebody that worked on a front desk for a gym for a year and a half and a manager with 3 years of experience to put this app together. That's just circus business, dude. Seriously.
Yeah, I can't disagree. There's plenty of apps out there, and I agree they've all done it wrong, in my opinion, in the GCC. And that includes the guys that have done in Dubai, that have done it in Saudi Arabia. You can't compete with guys out of Notre Dame and guys out of professional basketball teams and professional American football teams. These guys have bred professional players and have years of experience versus Joe Schmo that got his A certification a year ago or last weekend, you know? So
yeah,
I agree with that. Yeah. And let's shift gears a little bit so we're not hated too much.
Yeah, I know.
We're going to get shit for that one, man. But it's all good. It's
for
all
sure.
good. Hey, that's the whole point of this show is we police it a little bit. We bring guys like you on to kind of give the real life and the reality of these things for the listeners and for the business owners too.
Yeah.
Now, with COVID-19, do you see gyms remodeling to more of a social distancing model of having, I'm sure you've seen the pictures floating around with the gyms in the States now with the glass between the treadmills and whatever else.
Yes, I've seen that.
Are you guys thinking of taking that approach?
We are quite fortunate that we have some extra space in our facility on the gym floors specifically where we can move stuff around and it creates just the right distancing to abide by the regulatory requirements and guidelines. But man, I see some of these mass gyms, like the big facilities, you know, with multiple floors, and I think they might have to do some work before they're back into business.
Yeah. 100%, like Oxygen.
Oxygen, you have the Gold's Gym around the world, the Fitness First. 24 Fitness, these guys might have to do some moving around, some major moving around with the equipment, yes.
Do you think it needs to be done? Do you think it's going to... I mean, you brought up a good point by regulatory. Do you think new regulations are going to come out for the gym businesses, not only in the United States, but in Kuwait also, that mandate gyms to have a 4 or 6 foot distance? It would be detrimental to some gyms that are in some of these smaller gyms.
I know. You can lose a lot of money by doing that. It's going to depend on governments. I've done quite a lot of research, obviously, in the past few weeks. I know a lot of the gyms in Dubai are back into business now. And the Dubai government has passed laws where they have to social distancing is mandatory in these facilities. I know in the US, a lot of the gyms are not open, but according to IHRSA, I'm sure you know IHRSA, they have said, yes, that social distancing is probably going to be mandatory.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. That's going to suck. What advice could you give some of the smaller gyms? Just as an example, I mean, let's take, for instance, like CrossFit Kuwait. They're a smaller gym, very popular amongst the community, a great gym. I've been there. And they're in a smaller facility where they have limited space already. How would a gym similar to them go about practicing social distance? Would it be get rid of one of the rigs or get rid of a squat rack? Because it would be tough.
Maybe not. I think smaller facilities might suffer less than the mass facilities for two reasons. The smaller facilities, you can only allow a certain amount of people into this space anyways, to begin with. So if you had, let's say, 12 per hour, now you're going to have to cut it to maybe 6 to 8 per hour, which is not so bad. But the one thing you can do to prevent a hole in your pocket is extend your training hours. So if you trained 5 groups per day with a 12 per group, now you're going to have to do 8 groups per day with a 6 to 8 person per group. You're going to have to work a little bit more, but you can avoid that dent in your pocket by the end of the month.
Yeah.
So that's one way to look at it.
I'm going to go on a limb here, just from what we've talked about, and I'm predicting this, that HIIT classes, I think, are going to be the next new bang for your buck as a gym, because those are a half an hour class. You can brand it as a HIIT class, burn your 800 calories that you would burn in an hour, burn it in 30 minutes. So yeah, all you people, gym goers and gym owners, you guys owe me 10% of whatever chairs you get. Whatever.
With less people.
I know, right? Yeah. With less people. You guys owe me 10% next year. I'm claiming my 10%. That's the only way I could see a gym working, because the peak hours are from 4 to 7 at most gyms, right?
Yes.
And how are you going to, if you're running a CrossFit class or if you're running a boot camp class for an hour and you can only fit 6 people in there, you're not going to get that same volume, and people are going to, they're going to start to notice how packed the gym is. Whereas if you break it up into half hours, that's the only way I see it working, to be honest with you.
Yes. And I think you're absolutely right about this, Mehdi, because earlier this morning, I had a team meeting with my management staff, and what you are telling me is a lot of things that we've discussed earlier this morning. But also, let's remember, this is a phase. Gym openings are going to be divided between 3 to 5 phases post-COVID-19. So people have to kind of cope with this in the beginning. So do trainers and coaches and gym bosses or owners. But once that phase kind of fades out, then you can probably go back to normality and extending these classes and bringing in a little bit more people at a time.
Yeah. Psychologically, you've had years of experience. And Dr. Deet, she's a psychologist on our show.
She's wonderful, dude.
Thanks, man. Thanks. I'll tell her. I'll pass it on to her.
Amazing.
She brings some great knowledge. And we've talked about this, me and her off air, about the psychology of people going back into the gym. And, is the floor dirty? Is this bar dirty? Has it been wiped down? How do you think that's going to play a part? I mean, your operational costs are going to go up. So have you guys talked about that at all?
I think we have to be very transparent, and the communication has to be 2 or 3 times as much as it was before with our clients. And as a brand, you have to reassure them that you're sanitizing around the clock. It's every hour. Our sanitization sheets or shifts will be up posted on our walls.
Yeah.
Just to reassure people that you're walking into a clean and hygienic facility.
No, I remember seeing in early February, one of the first gyms that I saw putting in new sanitization machines was CrossFit Kuwait. I tipped my cap.
Yes.
They jumped on it right away. It's going to be a difficult journey back. And speaking of operational costs, let's go into what's going on with some trainers right now. You have gyms that are laying off trainers. You have gyms that are not paying trainers or not paying trainers, not just giving them the cold shoulder, but they're saying, hey, we're broke. We can't pay you right now.
Yeah.
Then you have gyms that are knocking their payroll down 50%, saying, hey, we won't give you your full base salary. We're only going to give you 50%. But then you have the gyms that are still able to pay their employees the full salary, which to me is you have very high quality trainers to begin with. So you want to keep them.
Yes.
And it will cost you more to rehire them, possibly. So what's your take on that from an HR perspective?
Well, I'm going to give you all my secrets here, man.
You don't have to divulge them, but that's why we have like a lot of great listeners, because we get people like you to like give up their secrets, man.
We did something that probably nobody has ever thought of. We did reduce salaries because we are a revenue-based, obviously, business. But we did it on a scale level. So the lower your salary was, the less we would deduct. And as it went up, the higher percentage would be deducted. But we did it as a loan. So our employees are loaning us this money right now, and we guaranteed on paper that it will be paid back in the near future.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
So whatever I take from you today, let's say, Mehdi, you're a top trainer at my facility, and you do some management work, and we pay you 1,000 KD. And we decided that we're going to cut 30% out of your salary for 3 months. So I'm taking 900 KD from Mehdi in 3 months. Whatever I take from Mehdi will be paid back in full once business is back to normal and everything is... And once, obviously, we start making the money back. This is an approach where we want to keep everyone that we have. We don't want to get rid of any staff. And I think what's most important at this time is to really keep what matters. And without this staff, your business would never be where it's at. Hands down, dude. We give everybody their credit, and we honestly didn't want to get rid of anyone. We wanted to keep everybody here.
That's amazing, man. I love that approach. I think that approach, and that's where you find out where the real team players are too. So I'm sure that's where you find out where the real team players are. Because if you have a high base salary person, they're like, no, you're not just cutting, you know, you're not cutting more from me than you are from the guy at the front desk. Yeah, but you make three times more than him. So it makes sense. Yeah. And I think that approach is an amazing approach. And I tip my cap to you guys for doing that and coming
Thank
up with
you,
that.
Sir. And we had positive feedback from everyone, and they appreciated everything that we've done so far and continue doing. And that's what you need, dude. You know, you want loyalty, and these guys have shown me loyalty in the good and bad. The least we can do is give it back.
That's amazing. It's truly an amazing approach. And I think if a lot of companies followed the same suit, you'd have a lot better brand surfacing around and more loyalty towards the organizations. But unfortunately, it's usually the guy at the bottom that gets cut, and the managers up top that get paid $10,000, they're staying around, or the highest payroll sticks around. So that's awesome that you guys did that. And especially that you're paying it back as a loan too. That's amazing. That's amazing. I tip my cap to you, man. That's some...
Thank you, sir.
Really humane stuff you guys are doing, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. And our salaries that were below a certain point were not touched at all, because these guys need every KD they make, dude. You can't take anything away from them.
Yeah.
So the minimum wage were not touched at all.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Good on you, man. Good on you guys. Seriously.
Thank you, sir.
That's really commendable right there. No, seriously. I mean, at a time like this, that's really commendable, to be honest with you. There are a lot of good examples. I know a guy who takes his government salary just to pay his employees, you know, and...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Some people treat it like family, but at the end of the day...
Yeah, it is a family, yes.
And the gym business, unlike most businesses, it's a very close-knit community at the gym between the trainers and ownership. So a good gym, I can tell a good gym when I walk in the door. Just by seeing the trainers interact with themselves and management, I can tell, okay, this place has a good atmosphere. The chemistry is nice. And you guys have a great atmosphere. The chemistry is really good. So what I've heard, that's awesome, man. Good on you, dude.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Last question before we wrap it up.
Sure.
Do you only see the big boxes surviving after this if it goes on for another month or two? And just a quick question. Is the government going to give any relief toward small gyms? Do you have any idea?
I know there was talks that there's a certain amount of money that should go into the small business sector. And there is a certain amount of money that should save, they're calling it saving the private sector for the bigger businesses. But nothing has been passed yet, to be honest.
Where do you stand on that from a businessman's perspective and someone in the community? Like, what's your stance on the government bailing businesses out after a time of crisis?
I don't think they should bail us out. I think businesses that do need the help should apply, given their numbers, their budgeting, their track record, and explain why you need this help. They shouldn't give it to you, basically. It should be a loan with an extended timing. If they're giving you 10 years, maybe they can give you 20 to 25 years. And maybe over time, you can only pay 80% of it. Don't pay the full thing back. Pay 80%, 90%, depending on how big of a dent you have. So they should treat it case by case. They shouldn't say, okay, we're giving $2 trillion to the private sector. That doesn't solve anything, dude. This affects our next generations to come. So they should treat it per business with a committee that evaluates, a financial, an accounting committee, that an audit that evaluates, and they say, okay, you applied for 10 million, we can give you 8. You pay it back in 25 years and we'll give you 85% grace. So that the 15 is like a grace, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. That's what I personally believe. A lot of people will disagree, but I think that's how it should be done.
No, I agree with you 100%. I don't think anyone should get free money, because I had this debate with someone who is a business owner. And he was like, yeah, we need that money from the government. I said, here's my question. Why is your business not sustainable? That's my first question.
Exactly.
Two, if they're giving you free money, they should give me free money. They should give me free money before they give. They should give the employees in the private sector who aren't collecting a salary free money before they give it to you as a business.
Exactly.
Because these people are going to feed into that business. They have to have that spending power. Because if you're going for a handout this month, you're going to go for a handout next month too.
Absolutely.
I like that stance. I'm surprised. I'm honestly surprised. I thought you'd be like, no, they should give us relief. But I'm shocked.
And when all this happened, I read on Twitter a few of the guys that are very active. They were addressing this to the private sector. They're like, look, you guys have been in business for 50 years, making all this money. Has the government ever asked you to give them a cent in return? No.
Yeah.
So why should they give it to you now?
It's a good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
That's an excellent point right there.
They're not obligated to give you anything at the moment.
Yeah, that's a really good point, man. I like that. Well, all right. Our last question, and then you're off the leash for this one.
Sure.
After this, if this prolongs for another month or two, do you only see the big box gyms or the bigger gyms such as yours prevailing and sustaining into next year? Or do you actually see some of these small boutique gyms coming out of this and surviving?
Not necessarily. I see some of these boutique gyms hanging in there and surviving. And you know what? They might get a lot of membership post-COVID-19 because it's a smaller space, so less people interaction. And if you have a reputation, you have a brand that you've looked after, I will know firsthand, you know what? Mehdi's gym is clean. I know the cleaning staff. I know everybody that does all the sanitizing. And I know he's not going to just let his facility just go free without being cleaned or whatever. I know Mehdi that well. That's one side that might keep all of these businesses still up and running. Yeah.
Inshallah. I hope it really does.
Inshallah.
I mean, I feel bad for the gym business as well as the hotel business. I think they're really kind of going to suffer out of all of this the most.
A lot of the hotels are renting their facilities to the government now. So I think they should be okay.
Over here in Kuwait.
Yeah.
In Kuwait, yeah, they're lucky. But other countries, I mean, I know some hotel managers and they're just like, dude, we're really struggling.
Oh, yeah.
We've had to let go of a lot of people. And yeah, it's a tough situation. And I don't know, hopefully that we get out of this soon and we're not in quarantine for another month or another 2 months.
I know. Hopefully, man. Hopefully.
But dude, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and divulging some of your secrets on here. I really appreciate bringing you on. I love having you on, man. It's a good chance to talk business, weightlifting, and everything, dude.
It's always an honor being on the show, bro. And it's always nice speaking to you in person.
I appreciate it. And hopefully when all this is done, even with some social distancing, I can bring you back in the studio. It's new.
Yeah, let's do it.
I just redid my whole studio, so it's a lot different from the last time you were there.
Let's do it, man. Let's do it. I'm up for it.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Habibi.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. You can also find us on Instagram at The Project Kuwait. Thank you, and join us next time.